The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your Wembley-bound, sort of, Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic FC. I've got George Corkin and Chris Woff with me today. How is our cup final anxiety, George? How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm not feeling anxiety. I've got cuppy fever.
You've got the fever, have you?
Yeah, I'm like...
Temperatures?
Yeah, full-on
temperatures. Shivers, bloating, that kind
of thing. I've gone through the anxiety stage. I did all that.
All right. Okay.
This time last week, I'd have taken a 1-0 defeat and not... Yeah, let's not put ourselves through this agony. But no, I'm absolutely buzzing, really looking forward to it. Can't wait. I haven't had enough of these experiences in my life to be blasé about them. I'm like a kid in a sweet shop, but I'm like Chris Woff in a butcher's.
I've never thought I'd hear George Culkin use the very, very youth footballer term of I'm absolutely buzzing.
What was the thing that we did in our live podcast? What was that?
There was, yes.
You did a poll.
That you told me to put up, yeah.
Are you buzzing? Relatively buzzing.
Relatively buzzing, yeah.
Slightly buzzing, yeah.
I'm not relatively buzzing, yeah. I'm full-on buzzing.
All right, okay. How about you, Chris Woff? Are you full-on buzzing?
I'm physically bleeding out of
my
hands.
What have you done?
It must be because... it must just be because George and I have been working so hard getting our pre-Wembley
These
content.
These are the levels,
you know, that's what it is,
that Chris Woff
Yeah, we've been at Eddie Howe. I was going to say 6 a.m. starts. Actually, it's been earlier. 5 a.m. starts the last few days, getting pieces out.
Yeah.
Trying to run our pre-Wembley race. Hopefully, we're not burnt out before the final. It's weird because it's sort of... A few people have asked me this question this week, and because it is so busy in the build-up to it, it's like my mind hasn't sort of cast forward to the weekend yet to sort of fully... absorb what it is going to be, and I think it probably won't until the sort of journey down on Saturday. So yeah, I think I'm still sort of contemplating what's coming this weekend, because Newcastle also have, I was going to say, a media day. It's not the same as it was 2 years ago, because they're very big, as I've said previously, on playing down. The significance of this relative to 2 years ago is not being bigged up, so instead we're getting Eddie Howe and then two quote-unquote very senior players who are yet to be revealed. To speak to on Friday morning.
I'm sure everybody wants to know, Chris, have you bled black and white? I think that's what everybody wants to know. Or is it just red like everyone else?
Just...
No, it's mince. I've told you before, he bleeds mince.
I'm weeping mince.
Surely it's gravy. Surely it's gravy. Mince. How does mince get out of a tiny cut like that? It's got to be gravy, hasn't it?
No, I don't know.
Yeah. Here we go again, chaps. I mean, we've been here very recently, haven't we? But it feels very different to last time, George, doesn't it? In a kind of... unspecifiable way?
I think it's relatively specifiable in the sense that 2 years ago, it had been a very, very long time since the club had been at Wembley, 1999 for a cup final. That felt like a long time. And of course, it came in that unbelievable season.
That's right, yeah.
When Newcastle United ended up finishing fourth, but sort of like every weekend just felt like this sort of beautiful explosion of joy, because Newcastle were winning games. It was like didn't feel real that we had this sort of incredible team that was sort of winning in front of us, when we were so used to sort of seeing the opposite. Yeah. And I think that was the mood that carried Newcastle to Wembley. Like, everybody was like wide-eyed and open-mouthed. It was like, oh, this, yeah, just sort of almost this beautiful naivety to the whole
feeling. What a fabulous experience this is going to be. And then, yeah.
Yeah, well, no. And being in Trafalgar Square the night before, everybody just sort of getting together as a football club, completely needed, I think, that kind of blowout. Be with friends, be with family, meet up, be away from Tyneside, have this sort of set piece where, like, well, this is what we've done it for. This is why we stuck through with the club through that difficult period, the terrible period we went. And it's like this brilliant set piece. I think that was the mood. It can't be the same this time, because it's only a couple of years. We're more used to seeing Newcastle be either good or competent. It was two quarterfinals in the domestic cup competitions last season. It was the Champions League. And so I'm not saying this feels like a natural home, but it just feels slightly more business-like than it did 2 years ago. But I'm sure, you know, as I said at the start, I'm incredibly excited. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, it just happened more recently, so I think we just feel a bit more familiar with it.
Yeah, I would say that's fair enough, Chris. Would you? I mean, I think I'm feeling slightly less giddy than what I did the last time. I think I went into the final with sort of wide-eyed wonderment, not really knowing what was going to happen. And then this time, I think I'm approaching it from a little bit more of a cynical standpoint.
Yeah, I think it was the fact that so much of the weekend last time with George Mensa was wonderful, but then there is the sobering reality of the actual defeat that Newcastle suffered, when really... Yeah. You look back at it, and even now, it's hard to sort of stomach, really.
Still quite fresh, isn't it?
Well, it's hard to stomach. I think it was almost the opposition then. If Newcastle had faced a side of Liverpool's quality 2 years ago, I think it would have almost been less stock if Newcastle hadn't. Yeah, it may be similar to 98-99, where they didn't turn up for either of those finals, you could argue, but they also were up against two very, very good sides who won other trophies and will go down as some of the best sides in modern English footballing history, whereas that Manchester United side very much wasn't, and it was just the fact that it did feel like such an opportunity missed. So I can see that added to the fact that this time actually it feels like there's less of an actual footballing argument to suggest Newcastle should win compared to 2 years ago. But I still think Newcastle having had their, I mean, we're going to come on to all this, but Newcastle had their sort of pre-final, or we had our pre-final jitters of everyone getting very, very low last week.
Yeah.
And subsequently, I think this week things have maybe flipped a little bit, and Newcastle maybe have been elevated slightly mood-wise, and over on Merseyside, I think, as we'll find out in a little bit, whether the mood is actually taken a bit of a dip across there, given their exit from the Champions League and a couple of shaky performances.
If I can, in just one sentence, come back to that sort of feeling of wide-eyed from 2 years ago, I would say that this year it's like clear-eyed. You know, it's like it's not that kind of, oh my God, this is amazing. It's like, okay, we're up against it. We're really up against it in this match. And that does give you a form of clarity, I think.
Yeah.
And so that feels like the prevailing
mood. Yeah, there's a job to be done, isn't there? It's worth mentioning Michael Walker's article on Northeast football clubs shooting themselves in the foot. It's a very timely piece, that, and I would encourage everybody to check it out. It's very, very good. We've shrugged off that terrible week we had last week with that win against West Ham. Chris, that was massive, wasn't it? The club really needed that win on Monday.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it as the match itself, the match was largely instantly forgettable, and I probably have forgotten most of it. West Ham were very, very poor, but actually that was exactly the game that Newcastle needed, and just so much from it. You two and Jacob discussed it in depth in the pod earlier in the week, but for Newcastle to get a clean sheet, to get a victory...
If you want to discuss the goal in absolute minute detail, Chris, this is your moment.
Well,
this
I mean, Harvey moment. Barnes had the ball on the left-hand side of the area.
Left-hand side of the area, yeah.
I'll leave it. Even Harvey Barnes being involved in the goal, the fact that Newcastle's left-hand side has been entirely restructured, and there were some positives from that. I'm not saying it was perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And Livramento, yes, he cuts inside when he goes down the left-hand side, but there's space for it to move into. And given everything that happened in the Premier League, for Newcastle to not have to worry so much going into this weekend as to what happens elsewhere, because they've got themselves back up to sixth, whereas if they'd been ninth going into this weekend and you suddenly see the results going against you, then that plays further into the sort of tension around the final. So I think just everything about it, has changed the mood. It hasn't completely evaporated what was there before, in terms of Newcastle still aren't going to have Anthony Gordon and Lewis Hall or Sven Botman, and they are still scratching around for certainly attacking form, but I think that it gave everyone a bit of a lift, really.
Yes, Alan Wiley on... I'm going to do that again because it's Willie. Yes, Alan Wiley. Fucking hell, I've just said the same name twice.
It is Alan Wiley, so yeah. Alan Wiley said... Can you just keep doing that? That was beautiful.
Right, let's try that again. we had a message from Alan Wiley.
Will he though, or will he, or won't he?
Will he or won't he? At Trickster 1966 on X, formerly known as Twitter. Last week I was very down about the final. Same old story for Newcastle United. I remembered we've come so far. The Hammers win helped me lift my head. Let's go and give them a game. Win, lose, we leave everything out there. He's got a point, man, hasn't he? We've just got... it's got to be done now, hasn't it?
That's it.
Just got to go and do it.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I mean about clarity. You know, this is the football club that Steve Harper, our longest-serving player, routinely describes as bipolar. We've got these huge shifts in emotions. Yeah. You know, it's either one thing or the other. We're never in the middle. Funnily enough, Eddie Howe is absolutely attempting to, you know, mould this club to be in the middle, to kind of treat fortune and misfortune the same way. But, you know, good luck with that. And no, I agree. I felt so irritated after Anthony Gordon got sent off, and then I felt miserable when, you know, you get that injury news. But the good thing to that is that form of clarity that last time we were at Wembley, Newcastle really didn't turn up, and neither did fans in the way they should have done, because everybody was hungover. Matt Ritchie, I did a big interview with Matt Ritchie, went down to Portsmouth to see him, and he said it was like a balloon in a children's party that's been up for 2 weeks. You know, everyone's like really, really excited. It's like, oh, we're going to go, it's been fantastic, you know, get the tickets, what are we doing, where are you staying, blah, blah, blah. And then by the time the final comes along, it's like a little bit of air has been released from the balloon, you know, and it was like that. It was a great description, I kind of thought. But there is this form of clarity now, which is that Newcastle, and I'm not like downplaying the players we've got or the team that Newcastle have, but Newcastle are not taking on Liverpool as equals. Liverpool are by far and away the most accomplished team in the Premier League this season. They've got some absolutely outstanding players. Newcastle are missing their entire first choice left side. It's not the position you want to be in. But the only chance that Newcastle have is to turn up and everybody to be at it. And as Alan Wiley says, you know, absolutely leave everything out there. And then Newcastle do have a chance, because we've seen it time and time again since Howe's arrived, that on those days where Newcastle give 100%, 100% of the time, they can be a match, and they have to be like that against Liverpool. I think that's the key. In some ways, that is flipping a negative into a positive. But if Newcastle do play like that on Sunday, this will be a cup final where they turn up.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I ask, really.
Absolutely. Chris, Eddie Howe's got decisions to make, hasn't he? The lineup. Obviously, the West Ham game's going to feed into that quite a lot. Is there any injuries or any fitness updates that we need to be aware of?
Well, if Eddie Howe is to be believed, he told George that he is not much of a poker player. So, therefore, I would be surprised if the 11, fitness permitting, that he played on Monday is not the 11 that starts this weekend. I think that for a variety of reasons. First of all, Newcastle needed some sort of positive momentum, and they need some rhythm within the team. They need to build relationships, particularly down the left-hand side. So it will be strange. I'll admit, I thought before Monday he was more likely to almost go back to the future and play Joe Willock and Joe Linton as like on the left-hand side, and the two of them may sort of interact down that flank. But he's gone for the more out-and-out winger option in Harvey Barnes, and Barnes had a couple of chances. I thought he was unlucky not to score. His header for the movement, his movement for the header, sorry, was very good. He also got an assist. I think it would be harsh then to drop him after that, or to take him out of the side. It would also be a curious move for that reason. Same in goal. I don't think he can keep flip-flopping between the goalkeepers. I thought that was a big call on Monday night, and I know that it was weird because he described Nick Pope as his Premier League goalkeeper, which made it seem like that was leaving it open for that Martin Dubravka could play this weekend, and maybe psychologically he needs to do that, but I think it would just create a bit of doubt again if he changes going into Sunday. I just think it's to me, that side seems to be, as I say, fitness permitting, the team who will start at Wembley, because I just think they needed some sort of positive momentum. And Alexander Isak didn't necessarily look fully fit or fully involved. And I've written about this at length for a piece which goes up on Friday morning tomorrow, that 2 years ago, Alexander Isak did not start at Wembley despite being fully fit.
That's right, yeah.
It's absolutely incomprehensible that he would not start this weekend, because he is Newcastle's difference maker. He is their goal scorer, and he just needs one opportunity, as he has had against Liverpool in the past and taken them. And so I think that, as I say, fitness permitting, I think it will be the same 11.
May I please just very briefly...
absolutely, you may.
...blow Chris's trumpet, so to speak. But no, I'm very lucky. I've had a chance to sort of read through this piece that Chris has done on Isak, and he's spoken to people at all levels at Newcastle. And really, it's about that story of how he's gone from not starting 2 years ago, which is astonishing.
Really,
if you think about it now, it's like you almost can't believe it. But again, in that season, it was Isak and Wilson pushing each other. I mean, I remember that. I kind of really enjoyed that kind of little narrative around the team that season, and they were pushing each other. But that in those 2 years, he has absolutely developed into a world-class centre-forward that anybody would be pleased to have in their team. And yeah, some absolutely fantastic insight in that piece by Chris on how Newcastle have got him to that point. Because you have to remember, I don't think it was a done deal. They spent a lot of money on Isak.
That's right.
He was a club record signing by a long way. He'd already had one go in the big leagues in Germany and it had failed. And at Sociedad, he was kind of seen, yeah, really talented, got a lot of potential, but was not the kind of player that was doing it week in, week out. So it was definitely a calculated gamble to sign him on Newcastle's behalf. I don't want to go on too much about that, but it's a brilliant piece and it is worth focusing on, because you would think that if Newcastle are to get a positive result against Liverpool, if they're going to beat them, that Isak will have to be integral to it. A player who has given Virgil van Dijk some problems in the past.
Certainly has, yeah.
Yeah, and win or lose, he will be absolutely one of the best players on the pitch.
I'd eat orchid.
We've had an email from James as well. Could Gordon's ban actually be a bit of a blessing in disguise? Our usual 4-3-3 in pressing game was never likely to work on that heavy Wembley pitch against this Liverpool side. Chris, is a chance that Eddie Howe could go slightly more defensively and therefore Gordon's running going forward might not be what's required in that situation. But it's always easy to say that after the fact, isn't it?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, Anthony Gordon was cup tied for the final 2 years ago. He also, like Alexander Isak, was not the Anthony Gordon that he has necessarily been in the last 18 months or so, in terms of he wasn't established. He'd only arrived in that January. Is it a blessing in disguise? I mean, I think to a degree it's almost irrelevant. It just, Newcastle have to make of it what it is. That is the reality of the situation they're in. Eddie Howe, as George outlines in his big read on Eddie Howe, which I would very much recommend, and the way that he works and basically his quiet revolution at Newcastle, that after the Sunday when Newcastle lose to Brighton, Gordon's been sent off, the news is starting to filter through internally at Newcastle that Lewis Hall's going to be out for a bit longer, Eddie Howe turns up on that Monday morning and his immediate thought is, right, what are the solutions to this? And that's what he's had to think like in the course of the last 10 days. Once Newcastle have decided they're not going to appeal, then don't have Anthony Gordon for the final. So therefore, he's not part of the solution. What is the alternative? And whether that means that Newcastle do press in a slightly different way, they probably will have to, because he does often lead the press. He is the one who is sort of intense in that way. And there is the big Wembley pitch. But Newcastle will have to tweak, because Anthony Gordon is a different player to Harvey Barnes. If it is Harvey Barnes starting, yes, they both like to cut inside. But I think that Gordon is more involved in both on and off the balls to what Newcastle do than Harvey Barnes is. So Newcastle have to find alternative solutions, and yeah, whether that's a positive or a negative, it is just the reality of the situation.
It's very difficult to say that when your left side has been your sort of primary attacking outlet for the season, yeah. It's very difficult to say that is a positive. But I suppose what it does do is it makes things a bit more uncertain for Liverpool in terms of what Newcastle might do. And as Chris says, it does provide an opportunity for other people. Now, Harvey Barnes, I think it's fair to say, is the one player really who's been signed by Howe who hasn't really kicked on. That's how it's felt to me anyway. But you don't get a better opportunity than this, do you? I think we saw Barnes not at his best against West Ham, but we had a flavour of what he can do. Yeah. You know what he's going to do. He's going to cut in and he's going to either try and cross or he's going to have a shot. Do you know who else does that? Mo Salah does that. That's all Mo Salah does. But that, you know, knowing that he's going to do that is not the same as being able to stop him. I mean, he's an absolutely unbelievable footballer. And that's like an opportunity for, such an incredible opportunity for Harvey Barnes. It's like, okay, it hasn't worked out so far here at Newcastle, but this is your chance. This is your chance to make this position yours and to help Newcastle win something. I mean, it's an unbelievable opportunity for him. We saw bits of what he can do against West Ham. He's not the same kind of player. He's not going to terrorise defenders. He's not going to niggle at them and sort of have that horrible hard running against them. But he offers something different and it's still a threat. That's why Newcastle signed him.
Absolutely. A small point of possible interest from producer Ollie. Was the London Stadium the ideal location for a pre-Wembley run-out with regards to the pitch size, the stadium and the location, etc., Chris? Ollie thinks that the London Stadium was a good place to do a sort of mock cup final.
Lack of atmosphere. That's the overriding thing about the
fans 9 miles away from the.
Yeah, I mean there are some similarities there. You are slightly closer to the pitch at Wembley to an extent. There isn't the running track around it. Yeah, I mean the size of the pitch. I suppose the difference is West Ham was so pedestrian and just lacked that. I mean, I think that's where it suited Newcastle on Monday in some ways, is that the intensity of the game was so low that Newcastle maybe didn't have to expend themselves so much. You would expect on Sunday probably they will have to do more so, although you have a Liverpool side who are very tired. It was interesting, someone involved in the fitness side of football and knows more, far more about these things than me, was talking about Liverpool having been pushed to extra time by PSG the other day. Is not only do you actually have the physical exertion, the extra half an hour of extra time, you can't actually train for that within football because you don't know you can have the extra half an hour, and therefore they don't quite know what the after effects will be. And obviously Liverpool lost a few players to injury as it was. So maybe it was a reasonable location. The fact that it delivered a win, I think, more than anything else is the biggest fillip that Newcastle could have had.
And any confidence that Newcastle have going into this, George, it's going to come from Eddie Howe himself, isn't it? He won't leave any stone unturned in the preparation for this game.
No, and yeah, I wanted to write about him because I thought it was time to do that, sort of take a step back, look at what he's done so far and look at what it is he does at Newcastle and how he does it. Similar to Chris's ESAC piece. Spoke to lots of people, both who've been at the club in the past, like Amanda Staveley, to people like Richie, who obviously worked with him very closely at Bournemouth and at Newcastle. And then again, through conversations that we've had with people at the club, really people who kind of work with him directly, just to kind of try and get a sense of what that's like. One reason I wanted to do that, I've always had that thought in my head about Sir Bobby Robson, you know, somebody who I knew very, very well and worked closely with, that towards the end of his life, towards the end of his career, he was like seen as this sort of like genial granddad figure almost. Yeah. He was incredibly eloquent, very, very dignified, full of like beautiful language. You know, the way he spoke was so kind of beautiful and almost poetic. And he forgot people's names every now and again. And there was almost this kind of cuddliness to him.
Yeah.
But actually, to do what he did, to, you know, to rebuild Ipswich from top to bottom, the first thing he did, I've told this story so many times, was have a physical fist fight in the dressing room with two players who wouldn't do what he wanted, you know, who were kind of rebelling against his leadership, to work for so long at England, to work at Barcelona. I mean, incredible jobs, you know, to bounce back from England. And then, basically the point is you have to be hard as nails. And there was still this cliche about how Amanda Staveley talked about this. It was like, God, he was so good in his interview, but he's just been relegated with Bournemouth. There was this feeling about him that there was like a softness almost. You know, it's the South Coast, it's genteel, they don't have a lot of fans. Yeah, he did great, but he's this nice, polite, youthful guy. They play tippy-tappy football, but Christ, that's not really what Newcastle need. And actually, his career, both as a player and as a coach, has all been about hardship, has all been about adversity. And that's what he's taken to Newcastle. And it is, famously, first day in the job at Newcastle, getting to the training ground at 6:45 and absolutely sort of shocking everybody. But 6 a.m. starts are the norm for him. That would be irrelevant if he didn't make use of the time, but every bit of that time is filled up. And it is hard work, but it's hard work with a purpose. It's incredibly demanding. He's incredibly demanding. People use words like blunt about what he's like in person. If you don't live up to his standards, if you don't do what he asks, he can be incredibly spiky. He just does not accept a lowering of standards. That sort of methodology goes into everything from people compiling reports from him, members of staff, to doing passing drills in training. You know, that little bit where you would be having a little bit of fun at the start of a session, he demands that everybody's on it at that point. And if you misplace a pass, he comes down on you. Him and Jason Tindall come down on you like a ton of bricks, because that's the whole basis of what they're trying to do at Newcastle. And so I love doing this piece. And he does come across as an obsessional man, a man who doesn't really do anything aside from give his time and his life to the football club. Very ambitious, very, very driven. And so, to come back to your original question, sorry that I've meandered on there, but he's the right person for this club at this moment. I wouldn't swap him for anybody else. I really, really hope that he's the manager that ends this long trophy drought, because I just think he is fantastic.
Chris, do we need Liverpool to have an off day here? I mean, it feels like it's been weeks that we've been deciding whether we want them mired in a title race, and we've been analysing every one of their results with kind of cup final context in the background. Do we need Liverpool to have an off day?
I'll say yes, but again, caveating it with I want to hear what the sort of Liverpool perspective is, in the sense that are Liverpool able to hit their heights that they have done recently? And if Newcastle, say, were to score early and Alexander Isak scores early, do Liverpool have it within them to be able to fight back from that? Are they in good enough form themselves? Yeah. So rather than off day, more is it just that do we just need Liverpool to play maybe how they did against Southampton last weekend? And I do think that, yes, if Liverpool play to their very best, the likelihood is that 9 times out of 10 they win this match, even with Newcastle having the quality of Sandro Tonali, Alexander Isak, Bruno Guimaraes. Liverpool have quality throughout their entire side and are on course to run away with the Premier League title. So I think it would be helpful if they weren't at top form, but I also think you saw for 45 minutes at St James's Park in the second half, they fought back and Newcastle still managed to find a way to draw and possibly still should have won that game in December. So I think that Newcastle can just about match Liverpool, but not quite in terms of quality in every single area of the pitch.
Fair play. Inspired by a couple of listeners on Blue Sky, we asked social media followers to come up with an ingenious way that Liverpool could be derailed by bad energy this weekend. This is the original exchange. We just need Salah to not sleep tonight and step on one of the kids' Lego while up getting a Nesquik, and we might have a chance. I thought that was good. Someone underneath us replied, forget the Lego, we need a proper 3-pin plug job. If you've ever stood on a 3-pin plug in bare feet in the middle of the night, you'll know that is possibly the worst pain anyone's ever felt. It's horrendous. Some more ideas. Johnny, at the Maybe Pile on Blue Sky, it would be great if the entire first team squad got summoned for immediate jury duty. Like that.
That would be good.
On a Sunday,
yeah, interesting. Howie Man Chris has also said, what if it was a result of snaffling an entire bag of delicious, rich, meaty snacks, which its miserly owner would have otherwise rationed to one a day?
What, is this to try and distract me for the cup final? Or is this to just...
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. we don't want Chris to be on an international meat
give the entire
chase
team sort of bad acid indigestion. Is that what we're trying to do? Fair enough. But the clear winner has got to be this one. Dan Law photo on Blue Sky. Liverpool bus driven by a suspiciously named yet fully licensed driver, one Mr. M. Ritchie, turns up at Wembley Way in Stockton on Tees rather than London, and they are forced to forfeit the match. George, you've got the contact. Can you make this happen?
I did ask him about that, and I'm not sure that this worked. That was so much added to the kind of cult of Matt Ritchie last year when he was like pictured on social media getting his license. Of course, he's not on social media, so he hasn't seen it. It was just like, this is brilliant. Is he entitled to drive a bus? The reason he's done this is because his kids go horse riding, and so he can then drive around a horse box. Would he be legally entitled to drive a bus? That could be the only thing
that's the only thing, isn't it?
Otherwise perfect.
It's the only thing that could possibly stop this from happening.
No, it's the only thing. It is.
Sorry,
the only
Matt,
thing,
you can't drive the Liverpool team coach to Wembley. You've got the wrong license. It's literally the only thing that can go wrong. It would be nice if Liverpool did have an off day, but it would be even nicer if they didn't and we beat them anyway. We can do it, as Paul reminds us. This email's from Paul in London. I just rewatched for the millionth time the highlights of us demolishing the team that just knocked Liverpool out of the Champions League. I'm not saying we beat PSG then so we can beat Liverpool on Sunday, but this team can do amazing things. Howie, the fucking lads.
That's absolutely it. I mean, we don't have to go back very far to see Newcastle doing this, albeit with more players to choose from. But
capable,
like,
aren't we?
The second leg of the League Cup semi-final against Arsenal, I can't tell you how nervous I was leading up to that. I was there for the first game at the Emirates when Newcastle were brilliant, clinical, cold, controlled, executed their game plan brilliantly. And then when we get to the second leg, it's like my head's gone, basically. It's like, they'll score an early goal. They've got great players. They'll score an early goal. We'll collapse. We'll go to pieces. And that'll be that. And, you know, it was an object lesson in the kind of madness of Newcastle, but also in, you know, the new Newcastle, which when they turn up and play like that, that there is there. And They were so cold, so clinical in that second leg. It was business. And, you know, they just shut the game down. They have that in their locker. And, yeah, I mean, I think that thing about Liverpool having an off day, that won't be something that Howe will be giving a moment's thought to. It's about what his plan is, what the players are. That's how they'd be prepared. They'll have their own tactics, their own approach, their own preparations, and it'll be about being the best they can be. And I think that's the point. If Newcastle play like that, they can beat anybody. And that has to be the message for them, for fans, for everybody. Be relentless. Be absolutely hostile. Do absolutely what you've prepared for, and you can win, most definitely.
100%. Right then, let's go into a break, chaps. We'll be back in just a moment with some info from the other side. So time for a bit of a parlay then. The Athletic's Liverpool podcast Walk On is hosted by Tony Evans, a man who seems to be, quite frankly, spectacularly overqualified for the job. He's a man of many talents with a storied career behind him and many strings to his bow, not least as a novelist, but undoubtedly his greatest achievement is surviving life as George's boss when he was football editor at the time. Yeah. So, Tony, welcome to Pod on the Tyne. First of all, managing George, how the hell did you get away with that?
Well, he was difficult, wasn't he? He always disappeared when there was big sackings in the northeast. He'd go fell walking in the middle of nowhere, and all he'd get is like a dead phone. And I left some frankly abusive messages for him that probably, you know, HR would drag me in for today.
And there were a lot of sackings in the northeast as well, so that is quite a regular occurrence.
Yep.
I think it was mainly Sunderland sackings that was happening a lot, but I had like an extraordinary collection of voicemail notes. They were based around the same theme, which was one particularly graphic and offensive word, and it would correspond to what I was doing. So I would tell them, yeah, I'm just having a day off, I'm going to the Lake District. So that message was, you fell walking bleep. And that was all I had on my, but it was, some of them got quite, because I was like, I can't remember, you know, maybe I'd gotten a Barcelona for a weekend. You tapas eating, and it was a good collection of insults.
Yeah, well, in the reality, he was as good as gold, apart from disappearing at vital moments.
Yeah, he does that to us as well sometimes, doesn't he, Chris?
Yeah, quite regularly. Yeah, just when you need him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Tony, Liverpool, Newcastle, it's an interesting relationship, isn't it? There's always been a bit of a feeling of solidarity between the fans and much more animosity towards, for example, Manchester United from our end.
Oh, definitely, definitely. You know, it's there's been a relatively good relationship between the two sets of supporters. And, you know, we'll see that at Wembley again. I mean, I remember in 1974, you know, you're all too young for that, but those brilliant songs, you know, that Georgie was singing afterwards. He said, we went down to Wembley in 1974. We were going to win the cup. Supermach was going to score. We showed the Scousers how to sing. We showed them how to sup. The only thing we didn't do was win the flipping cup.
Yeah,
that's been a relatively regular refrain. That's certainly that last bit.
I think there's as good an opportunity as for a long while. I mean, it was disappointing a couple of years ago that you didn't beat United.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, you know, everyone was wearing black and white that day. I don't think there'll be that much solidarity on Sunday, but, no. You know, it's... I do think there is opportunity.
It might change now as well, with Liverpool becoming a bit more of a dominant force in English football as well. Maybe, you know, we'll have our pitchforks out for you.
Well, maybe. But, I mean, you seem less paranoid and weird than Arsenal fans. You know, I think,
nobody's as paranoid or weird as Arsenal fans, are they?
Yeah, we've had experience of that. Yeah.
You know, being from the Northeast, I think you're more grounded in reality. Well, you are more grounded in reality than some fan bases. So I think things should, you know, remain fairly stable. And anyway, it is a big question whether Liverpool will maintain the dominance of this season. Because, I mean, of course, you know, it's quite likely they're going to lose the backbone of the team for next year.
Now, we all know what this would mean for Newcastle. Basically everything. You know, I'd give away several superfluous digits to see Newcastle win.
The ones you type with.
Basically the ones I type with, yeah, absolutely.
I can see that's superfluous.
Thank you. It's getting a bit more like our previous relationship. But like, you know, it would mean everything. You know, it's the one thing that I've never experienced as someone who's watched Newcastle all my life. I'm desperate to know what it feels like to win something. How would Liverpool fans be approaching this Sunday? Is it like a big deal in the cosmic scheme of things? Obviously, you want to win it, but what would the mood be, and where does this sit in the pantheon?
Well, I think getting knocked out of the Champions League by PSG during the week has cast a cloud over a season which people should be bouncing into the cup final, and they're not really. I mean, it's like, oh, the League Cup. You know, it's almost, what was 11 times if they win it. And people, are, I think, take it for granted a little bit. So it's, in fact, some of the fan base are even taking winning the league for granted. And I'm saying to them, all right, we could almost declare by the end of, April. And you're like, oh, the season hasn't worked out as well as it could have. And I think there's a little bit of, a little bit of smugness among the Liverpool fan base that, like, really, it's a bit distasteful as far as I'm concerned.
Tony, do you think the PSG result and the game has done anything to the team's psychology or the momentum behind them?
Well, you don't know. I mean, Virgil van Dijk spoke afterwards about that, and but there has been in all through the season, I suspect, a little bit of fragility in the mentality. And I think we'll see in the coming weeks how big an impact on the team the allowing the contract situation of Alexander-Arnold, Virgil van Dijk, and Salah to get to this stage, so the impact of that, which is frankly, it's mind-boggling to me that's been allowed to get that way. But yeah, I mean, it is. They've been brilliant, and they've played really good football. But I mean, the other thing that's open to question is Slot's grasp of tactics, his big games, his experience in big games. His substitutions the other night weren't great, but he's been very, very good all season. So there's loads of questions. But you'd think, the way the season's gone, they should be in a position to answer most of them.
Tony, when I was at Anfield a couple of weeks ago, like speaking to people who cover Liverpool regularly, they sort of said that Liverpool seemed to not coast through games, but they get to a certain point and it almost feels like they're conserving energy and they don't step it up. And obviously they beat Newcastle 2-0 and Newcastle didn't really sort of fire a shot in anger. And it, at that point, it felt like Liverpool, if they had to, could have stepped it up a couple of gears. But in hindsight, given what's happened subsequently, my thoughts are maybe, is it that actually they can't, because they can't physically do that? Where do you think Liverpool are at in that sense, in terms of where they are physically and the way that they're playing at the moment?
Yeah, they do look tired. I mean, he's picked the same team. He's picked the same 11. 46 games, Klopp. It took him 491 to do it five times. So he hasn't mixed the squad around. So you think to yourself, are we about to see the weakness of the squad? And it was this time last year we dropped off, which is the League Cup final against Chelsea was at the end of February. And after that, injuries and tiredness really had an impact on the season, and they fell off a cliff. I mean, they could fall off a cliff and still win the league this year. Yeah. So, I mean, it's fine in that sense. But, if I was sitting there up, on Tyneside, I'd be like, maybe there's an opportunity to get at them.
Well, so that was going to be my kind of question. We've talked a lot on this pod over the past few weeks, really, about angst, how we're feeling. Is that part of Liverpool's psyche, your psyche at all, approaching this match? I mean, the one obvious thing, I guess, for all of us is Alexander Isak and how good he is. You're not getting him, by the way. But
swap you for Darwin.
No.
It's a good deal, honest.
No deal.
And he has given Virgil van Dijk some kind of tough moments. Is he the one Newcastle player that you would look at and think, yeah, we're worried about him?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's a really good player. And all you hear coming out of Anfield is, oh, well, he'd really suit us. But I think there's a realism there that, it's not going to, that's not going to happen, because Newcastle's have to be absolutely insane to allow him to leave. So, yeah, there is concern. But, I mean, your injuries appear to be getting better. I mean, the other dope getting sent off didn't help. I mean, because especially now when you think Kwanzaa's going to be at right back playing out of position, you could have profited significantly. But, yeah, I mean, obviously all eyes will be on Isak. Without a doubt.
Tony, two trophies, that's greedy, isn't it? You don't need both of those, do you? You can let us have the Carabao Cup. It's not a big one.
Yeah, go on.
It's not a big deal, is it?
Come on.
You know, I was thinking like 1984, and I was thinking three, you know. I mean, it's like, yeah, so it's only going to be two now. Yeah. I can probably live with two. I'll have the ump if it's only one.
I mean, going into, when you mentioned the trophies, though, going into sort of the 74 final, if I remember correctly, and I've heard this stat before, I believe Newcastle and Liverpool were level in terms of major trophies won at that stage. And in the subsequent 51 years, Liverpool have won 40 major trophies and Newcastle haven't won a single one. So the trajectories of both clubs have been very different. So I think you've had enough now. Yeah. I think it's time to loan one to Tyneside for a bit.
We're greedy. We'll be honest about that. And but I have to say, if you do win, it'll be fair play. And if there's any club that you really can't begrudge winning the trophy, it'd be Newcastle. And so over the years, and George and I have had conversations about this, it's sometimes hard to understand how a club like Newcastle could go so long. I mean, we know that mismanagement has been at times on a mind-boggling scale, but even so, you'd think a little bauble here and there, every few years. I mean, even Everton have won trophies.
It's fair play. Thanks very much, Tony. I would say good luck for Sunday, but I really genuinely wouldn't mean it. So,
I think it's probably better to say have a great weekend.
Have a good weekend, yeah. Have a nice one. Thanks for coming on, Tony. Thanks for giving us your time. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you. Cheers, man.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Cheers, Tony.
Thanks, Tony. One of the most important people in my career and a man who I love.
All right, there we go. Lovely stuff from Tony. Let's dive on and we'll get through the rest of this little episode here. An email from Michael. A huge shout out to the NUST for organising pubs and bars for fan meetups Saturday and Sunday and to watch alongs and in advance to the wonderful War Flags who will be helping with the atmosphere as well. We had a message as well from Lasse on Blue Sky who said, travelling in from Norway to experience the Cup Fever in London. Would really love some tips on where to hang out on Friday and Saturday to get a proper taste of it since Trafalgar Square is blocked. What do we know about this, chaps? It's Covent Garden, isn't it?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, my one little tip, one very nice little place that I'm aware of is it's called Covent Garden. Yeah, if you just point yourself towards it, there'll be about 100,000 Newcastle United fans there. They'll all be wearing black and white stripes and they'll all be pissed out their heads. So I would recommend that. I mean, sure everyone's going to gravitate there.
I'm sure it'll be very chilled out and understated as well, George, won't it?
Well, if it was like last time, everyone will tidy up after themselves afterwards, so it'll be good. Yeah, I mean, really looking forward to that. I mean, yeah, my only little pep talk is to say, let's not have the hangovers kicking in at 4 o'clock at Wembley. Save a bit of energy for that, because I think that is one of the lessons from 2 years ago. A genuine little place to go is the Dolphin Pub, which is just around the corner from King's Cross. If you're anywhere near that, that's seen as Newcastle United pub in the centre of town. You'll have a great time there, I can guarantee that. But look forward to seeing you there.
I'm fascinated to see on the fringes of Covent Garden on Saturday when you've had tourists coming to London for this weekend who are just there to sort of enjoy the sights, and then they're trying to go, oh, you should visit Covent Garden. That'll be a lovely, lovely place to visit. You know, it's like quaint, all these sort of the markets.
Yeah.
And then they're going to get there and there's just going to be tens of thousands of Geordies. It's going to be a very unusual experience for those there.
There's been lots of requests for no letters either this time round. More requests for a less romantic attitude from us this time, I think, is the general consensus.
So this refers back to before the final last time 2 years ago. It was mainly Chris and Jacob, and I'm not washing my hands of it because it was absolutely beautiful piece. They got sort of messages from players' families mostly. Loved ones, just to kind of say how proud they were of them. And again, it was like, it was absolutely the right thing at that time. It was just this huge moment for the club. First time back at Wembley for 1999, and just a huge moment post-takeover, post the Ashley years. And it was really emotional. And the players did swap that piece around them, their own letters before the game, and I think it added to that sense of it was just too emotional, there's too much of that. So I stand by that piece because it was just kind of gorgeous. But everybody I think has that sense this time that it has to be more businesslike. It's like, absolutely, we go there, we mean business, and this version of Newcastle, you know, the thing that I've said repeatedly, we won the weekend, we lost the match, we have to kind of give everything into trying to win the match this time. However, I am going to be writing a letter to Newcastle United. I can exclusively reveal that will be going up on the site on Saturday. So you can shout at me all you want, but it's going to be a letter with a difference.
Well, we look forward to seeing that, definitely.
Hopefully some of you will read that.
Yes, absolutely. We'll look forward to reading that, George. I'm sure it'll be brilliant anyway. Just before we go, shout out to the Lasses, who have a huge game of their own away at Durham, with revenge on their minds as well. Revenge for the injury time winner at Kingston Park, but also maybe revenge for Durham not making it super easy to move the kickoff so the Lasses can watch the cup final afterwards.
Yeah, we'd heard a bit of a whisper about this, that that the option was given to Durham to move the kickoff a bit so that they could all watch the cup final, and Durham said no. I mean, that's absolutely their right. So Newcastle Women will be playing their game. It is a big match. I was there for that reverse fixture, and yeah, really got a sense of how streetwise and how competitive the championship is, and what a good team Durham are. You know, what a streetwise team. They didn't think they played very well. I'm actually doing something on Durham at the minute because they're a very interesting club. I'm not a traitor for doing that, by the way. Durham is my hometown. They're a very interesting story because they're the one team, along with London, also in the Championship, but except Durham have been doing it for years and upon years, who don't have that association with a men's team, that are doing it completely on their own. They're independent. They've been built from nowhere. They're a credit to the Northeast. But yeah, that should be a really feisty, spicy game ahead of the big derby the weekend after.
I'm happy, I'm going to get me suit measured.
Right then, just a quick email from JC, the big guy.
John Carver.
John Carver, yeah. Was listening to the previous pod and had a thought / premonition about how good the intro was going to be when we hopefully win the cup on Sunday. Also looking forward to hearing about the new lucky meat meal that Chris will have to keep having forever going forward if we do win. No pressure, guys. You better make it a good one.
Lucky meat sounds
lucky.
Sounds very sinister, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? Why don't you dip your arm into this bag of lucky meat, Chris, and see what you pull out?
What was it on League of Gentlemen that it's like they kept it sort of under the counter?
Yeah,
yeah, it sounds a bit like
that.
In a bin bag. Yeah.
Lush.
I mean, I'll be honest. I was saying this to people earlier in the week as well, that actually, now that I do start thinking about Wembley's, I hate everything about the place, mainly because I associate it with misery. And so I just want this weekend. I know Newcastle fans of previous generations do far more. I bumped into a woman in the street before who said that she'd been to 5 cup finals and seen Newcastle lose them all. And yeah, it's just one of those where everything around the sort of final, because you sort of build it up and then deflation. So it's just like the processing of Newcastle potentially actually maybe making it different this time, even if it's likely that they probably won't, I still think I haven't been able to switch that part of my brain, because I do just associate with even Newcastle going to play Spurs in 2 Premier League games there, they couldn't bloody score at Wembley. It was still covering 2 defeats. So
we've kind of joked a lot about, you know, particularly in the stuff that we write about, but it applies to the pod as well, that for a long time, and Tony would know this, so like I jokingly referred to myself when I was at the Times as a chronicler of misery, because I reported on Northeast football. My nickname at the time, which I didn't find out about until afterwards, was the Pope of Mope, because I had all that stuff at my fingertips. I knew about not winning stuff.
Yeah.
I joined the Times in 1998. I was there in 1998 as a fan. I was there working 1999. And, you know, but like for a lot of the time, it was the Mike Ashley era where Newcastle weren't even trying to win anything,
yeah,
really.
Absolutely.
It was very difficult. But that language of apathy or misery or disappointment, it was like putting on a comfortable jumper for me as a writer. And then the takeover happens, and suddenly, and you know, it's the same for the podcast when we started, and then obviously we had that COVID time. It was like trying to be interesting, trying to be funny, trying to be different was like a real challenge. But anyway, the takeover happens, and then suddenly we're having to use language that haven't used ever or for decades, you know, back to the Bobby Robson era, really. And it's the one thing that I've spent a lifetime waiting to write a piece about Newcastle winning a trophy, and I can't get my head around that prospect. But God, I would love to try.
Oh, absolutely! I'd love to celebrate a Newcastle trophy win. Maybe this is the week, George, that we get to do those things. We get to realise those ambitions.
Yeah, that's the bit I can't. That's the bit I can't sort of imagine. Just because, you know, it's like, I mean, this is why it's such an incredible opportunity and just a brilliant thing to be part of. Because, you know, you take a step back. I've seen Newcastle finish second. I've seen them get to cup finals and lose. I've seen them stink out Wembley. I've seen them get relegated. I've seen them near the bottom of the Championship in the early 1990s. I've seen a lot of mediocrity, and I've seen a lot of terrible football.
You've seen players fight each other and get sent off.
Impressive
stuff.
Seen absolutely everything, you know, apart from this one thing. And, you know, that's what's in front of the club, and as a fan base, that's what's in front of us. A chance to do and see something, be part of something that most of us will never have seen before in our lifetime. It's incredible to have that opportunity.
Yeah, it really is. I'm not going this time around. I haven't got a ticket this time around, but I'm going to be watching it with my family, my extended family, my partner's family, my boy Jackson's going to be watching it with me as well. We're going to have a big family gathering, and I can't imagine being anywhere better if we did finally put our hands on a trophy.
Yeah.
I think I'll be happy, and I'll be in a really amazing place with amazing people. So I'm really looking forward to that anyway. Let's finish off, chaps. Thank you very much for your time, Chris.
You're very, very welcome. Yes, so now it's full throttle into the weekend, and yes, I shall see, I imagine, thousands and thousands of Geordies in the capital at the weekend.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much for your time, George.
Oh, I've got that. I have proper adrenaline going. Chills. Now, I have to say. Yeah, thank you. Can't wait. Yeah, we'll be milling around on Saturday, so if you see us in Covent Garden, come up and say hello. We'll have a chat. Yeah, really looking forward to it.
And just to go around to the back of the start of the podcast, I've checked, and it was relatively buzzing to buzzing that we discussed in the live pod. So there.
Well, if we can bring the cup home on Sunday, I will be massively buzzing, Chris.
Yeah.
Massively buzzing. Right, thank you very much, everybody out there, for listening. Have a great weekend. Have a fantastic time down in London. Enjoy the game, and win, lose, or draw, behave yourselves, look after each other, and take it all in. Thank you very much again to George and Chris. Thank you to Tony Evans as well for coming on. Fantastic guest. We shall speak to you next week, when we will either be the holders of the Carabao Cup or we will be beaten finalists once again. Thank you very much for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, enjoy the weekend. Take care. Goodbye.
You did just float the possibility of a draw, however, which would, you know, still be in the balance. You said win, lose or draw.
Did I say win, lose or draw?
Yeah.
I mean, you could technically, you can draw after 90 minutes and 120 minutes, but then...
Oh, here he comes, Captain Logic.
Remember Steve Bruce said they didn't lose
That's very true. Burnley in the League Cup.
We're going to draw, just share it between
us. So, actually, that's not bad. So, like, Newcastle United don't quite have what it takes to beat Liverpool at Wembley, but a draw at 90 minutes, we're still in the cup, right?
Could we negotiate...
By that logic.
A share of the trophy? You have it for the first half of the year, we'll have it for the second half of the year, and we'll just...
Why not?
We'll each have an open-top bus parade.
Why not? It'd make life so much easier. We'll
just share it.
Why can't we just do that?
Share it? So much easier.
Well, you never know, do you? You never know.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.